Hello and welcome to the Columbia Daily Tribune's Mizzou Sports Podcast. This is Tribune Sports Editor Joe Waljasper, along with Tribune Football Beat Writer Blake Topmeyer and Tribune Men's Basketball Beat Writer Danny Jones. We will begin with football. Blake, Missouri loses again, this time to Kentucky, 35-21. They drop to 2-6 on the season, still winless in the SEC. It was sort of a game we've seen before. A very porous defense and offense that ended up scoring 21 points, but really it was two garbage touchdowns at the end that sort of made it closer than it really was. Maybe the only interesting development in this game was that apparently Missouri has reverted back to the defense it played the previous few years after trying and not doing too well with the gap control scheme that DeMonte Cross installed. So let's start there. Your thoughts on that decision by Barry Odom, A, to kind of seize control of the defense and make the calls, and B, to sort of, I guess, give in to the wishes of the players or to be willing to try something new, depending on how you want to look at his decision to switch back to the old defense.
Yeah, in the last 12 months, Missouri players kind of have a way of getting what they want yet again.
I would say the exact same thing.
Yes. In terms of Barry Odom taking over the play calling, that one didn't surprise me. I mean, I think when you have a defense that, you know, I had on my blog last week that has regressed more than any other defense in the country in terms of yards per game they were allowing last year compared to yards per game they're allowing this year, something's got to give. And so I think it was only natural for Barry Odom to step in and kind of take over the play calling there. I guess I was a little bit surprised to see them revert to the old scheme, only because I thought, well, if you've gone through seven games, you've kind of tied yourself to this idea. And plus, I kind of thought that this was what they wanted to do going forward. And so if year one has to become the sacrificial lamb, so be it, because this is the way they want to play. And so, I mean, if that's the approach, then I wouldn't have thought they would have changed it. But so I guess I was a little bit surprised in terms of that. The one thing I do wonder about is, are they changing it because they realize that they stink, or are they changing it because they lost Michael Shear, who was the guy making the calls in the old defense? I mean, it became pretty clear that, or I said the old defense, that it's now hard to distinguish between old defense and new defense, because the new defense is now the old defense. But anyway, the defense that they were running the first seven games, Michael Shear was making the calls, and it was a more complicated defense, and so you have your most cerebral player, the guy who was making the calls, now out. I wonder if part of the reason they changed was because it's like, okay, well, who's going to make the calls now? Who's going to orchestrate the on-field calls for this defense? They didn't really have anybody, and so they went to the more simpler defense that a lot of the players already knew from last year. I wonder if that maybe had something to do with it. I think that what I would really like to know, and I don't know that you'd get a straight answer to it, is what does Barry Odom really want to run? Like, will he want to run the 2015 defense? Like, in 2017, what does he want to run? Does he want to run the 2015 defense, or does he want to run the read and react scheme that they were running through the first seven games? Because whatever he wants to run in 2017 should be what they're running the last four games of the season, because I mean that's what this season has become at this point, is getting themselves ready for next year.
If we take him at his word from September, the defense he wants to run is the read and react scheme.
If we take him at his word, every injured player is going to be playing on Saturday, and 60% of the time they're still hurt Saturday.
So he did say back in September that this is what he wanted to do, and he just didn't have enough time the year he was the defensive coordinator. If that's the case, then this to me smacks of, you feel like your players are kind of holding their breath till they get their way, and they've just succeeded again. They were sort of willfully not adjusting to the previous scheme. But then to see them play, I got to be honest with you, when we talked to the players after the game, they all were saying, yeah, we went back. It was great. Went back to the old defense. I think it was obvious, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, it was not obvious to me whatsoever. I mean, the defense, if anything, looked as bad as it ever had. But then almost from an effort standpoint, it sort of looked worse. So to me, it wasn't a real evident improvement. it may have been different, but I don't know that it was better. So I'm with you. Unless you're planning on, you know, and I kind of prefer the old defense because I think it requires less thinking and allows guys to get up the field, and they'd kind of developed an identity at the school based around that. So if this is what they want to do going forward, I'm all for it. But if, like you said, if it's going to be read and react as soon as this season's over, then you're just screwing around with the defense and you're just sort of have given, you know, in your first year, you've given the message to the players, complain enough and you'll get your way.
I was just going to ask either one of you guys, and forgive me if I'm requiring you to openly speculate, but if this defense isn't running the scheme that DeMonte Cross brought in and Barry Odom is calling the plays, and it doesn't look like there's a lot of chemistry between Cross and this defensive unit, is he a lame duck coach at this point? What's his future at Missouri?
Well, I think that's kind of one of the elephants in the room for the remainder of this season, because to me, there's really not a real win situation at this point for the outcome of these last four games, because if the defense suddenly starts playing great, then I think everybody chalks it up to, well, it's because Barry Odom, you know, got back involved in the defense, and if the defense continues to be lousy, then maybe that acquits him a little bit better, but still, you know, ultimately he's the defensive coordinator, and I don't know if he's totally a lame duck, but I do wonder, like, how do you walk this back? You know, I mean, you just don't see a lot of situations where the head coach steps in and takes over the play calling duties for the rest of the season, and then at the end of the year it's like, okay, here you go, you can have him back now. I really don't know how they're going to walk this back if Barry does want to give Damani another season. I don't really know where they go from here. I mean, because they already have a co-defensive coordinator. We have three defensive coordinators now between Barry, Damani, and Ryan Walters. I don't know how they work this all out.
Well, one of the reasons they brought DeMonte Cross in was that he was going to open up some doors for them in Texas again to get back in there and start recruiting, because he had recruited Texas for a long time and had most recently been at TCU. And so that made a lot of sense to me. So I guess maybe the question would Damani want to come back to this situation? And logic would tell you no, but if he does not have another power conference defensive coordinator offer, it's unlikely that he would really want to go make $300,000 less or whatever the going rate for a position coach is compared to a coordinator. And so he might be inclined to stay. And then it would be up to whether, does Barry Odom want him for what he can provide as a position coach and a recruiter? And does that outweigh the fact that Barry Odom is now spending half his time as a defensive coordinator? It's a weird situation. I think it's got to be an incredibly awkward situation for guys who are former teammates and friends, because there's really no other way to read it as to Barry tapping Damani on the shoulder and saying, you know, you're not getting it done. Out of the way, let me take charge. And so, incredibly awkward. When you get into bad losing seasons like this, I think you find a lot of awkward situations. When you hire your friends, you find awkward situations sometimes. And I think Barry Odom is learning a few rookie coach lessons the hard way this year.
Yeah, and, you know, if you get rid of Damani Cross, you still, and let's say either Barry Odom, okay, so if you get rid of Cross, then you have to bring in another defensive coordinator who can coach linebackers. If Barry Odom's just going to stay in charge of the defense, which is what Derek Mason has done at Vanderbilt, then you still have to have someone to coach the linebackers, and you could have Damani Cross do that, and like you said, maybe be an ace recruiter, but...
How motivated is he to be an ace recruiter, though?
Yeah.
If he's just become the scapegoat for this whole season, and nobody's really sticking up for him whatsoever.
Right. And is he going to – are you going to give him the defensive coordinator salary? To if you're going to strip him of the title, or if this title is just purely ceremonial at this point, are you going to reduce his salary? Because that's what you should do. But, I mean, that's not going to fly. So, again, I just don't see – you know, you were saying, does he really want to leave and become a position coach somewhere? Probably not. But if he's not calling the defense, then he's really only defensive coordinator, kind of a name only.
And paycheck.
And a paycheck, yeah. So I guess if they kept his pay the same, then it'd be a great deal for him.
Another thing that I think Missouri thought it had sorted out, or at least I thought was sorted out, but maybe isn't, is is Drew Locke really the quarterback of the future of this program? Is he someone that they're going to build this offense around, or is that really still up in the air? He's lost 10 SEC games in a row. He won his first one and has lost the rest. We really haven't seen him be the reason Missouri has won a game. The games they've won, you could maybe the BYU game last year, but generally speaking, the games they've won, at least this year, were just such blowouts that, you know, by the fourth quarter, everybody was eating hot dogs, as Gary Pinkel would say. in your mind, has he done enough to say, yes, he's definitively the guy, build the offense around his strengths, recruit around his strengths, et cetera?
No, at this point, I don't think so. I mean, you take he's been better than he was last year, which the bar wasn't set very high. I mean, as a true freshman, he was one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the SEC, whereas now I think he's kind of a middle-of-the-pack guy. But, you know, if you were to just look at, like, the passing yards per game, it looks like he's had a whale of a sophomore season. But you take the Delaware State and the Eastern Michigan game out of it, and in the other six games, Locke has completed less than 50% of his passes. He's averaging just a hair over 200 yards passing per game in those other six games. In those other six games, he has 8 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So overall, been a very pedestrian quarterback and against teams that are not named Delaware State and Eastern Michigan this year. And so maybe this is kind of what we should have expected from a sophomore. You go from a really rocky freshman season to just making a stride as a sophomore season. But I'm not saying they should just throw him on the scrap heap. I still think it's his job to lose, but I don't think you can just kind of say, all right, well, he's the guy for the next 2 seasons and everything's settled. I mean, we just haven't seen enough out of him, I don't think, to warrant just kind of locking him into that spot for the next 2 years. And I think really, to me, that's the biggest storyline over these last 4 games, I think, is does Drew Locke seize control of this job and to where it's not even a debate, he's the guy next year. There's no question about it. Because as I said earlier, I mean, to me, the rest of the season is about 2017, getting yourself ready for 2017. They're not going to win 4 straight. They're not going to go to a bowl game. And the biggest question most programs have after mediocre seasons is who's their quarterback going to be next year. And so I think, to me, that'll be the biggest story of these last 4 games is does Drew Locke, you know, take control of this thing, or do we enter another off season wondering, is he a guy that can be a top tier quarterback in the SEC? Because I think people were saying after a couple weeks, you know, just that initial reaction of, oh man, he might be the best quarterback in the league. Well, he's not, and he's not the second best quarterback in the league. He's not the third best quarterback in the league. He's not the fourth. You know, I mean, there are guys, you start running down the list, and it's like, I don't know, if I was in an SEC quarterback draft, I might take Locke about 6th, which is okay, 6th, 7th maybe. But those middle-of-the-pack guys, I think, are kind of fighting for their job, you know, again, the next season.
I thought this game on last Saturday, his stats are okay. It was like 18 of 31 for 220 yards. But he missed some big plays. He had some plays where he had guys open deep and he was either overthrowing or underthrowing them on key third downs or just plays that could have been touchdowns. He had Jonathan Johnson one time mm-hmm. that could have been a touchdown and he overthrows him. And I don't know, to me, early in the season, those were throws he was making. The Georgia game, I think he would have made those throws. And that's my concern with him is that as the season starts to get worse, it seems like I don't know if he's the reason the season is getting worse or he's just getting worse as the season, but it just seems like he's not elevating himself nor the team. I think the Middle Tennessee game was another example where they were moving the ball all day long until they really had to in the last 2 drives, and then they didn't. So I'm still kind of waiting for him to have that moment that, you know, you saw it at Chase Daniel, you know, one of the first times he ever played against Iowa State where there's trouble, he leads them, wins the game. Not that everybody's going to be Chase Daniel, but I guess we're still waiting for that moment where he wins them a game and haven't seen it yet. On the other hand, if there's not a guy on the roster now who's the man, the kid redshirt and Jack Lowry, I think he was just kind of a late addition to the yeah. for depth. I don't think he's the man. I don't know that anybody that in the recruiting class now jump out and grab you. So now you're talking about who else is going to be the man next year. I mean, every time they put in Marvin Zahners, it's strictly to run the ball.
I don't understand.
As much as they talk about him being able to do the whole offense, he never does it. And so to me, from what I've seen of him running the ball, he's fine, but he's not Brad Smith. And so if you're not going to throw it at all, you have to be such a dynamic runner. And I think he's just the mobile quarterback everybody has somewhere on their depth chart. Or at least that's what they think he is, because we don't actually ever see him throw the ball. And so you're starting to get to the point where Drew's going to be a senior before he could even possibly get challenged if someone, you know, so maybe he is by default the quarterback of the future, I guess is what I'm saying.
Could it become the Jeff Driskel tale? Did he become, he reigns the quarterback because there's no one better to unseat him until his senior year? And then, yeah, I mean, he's fine. I think realistically, this maybe is what we should have. I don't know, maybe what we should have expected this year, a sophomore year that's filled with inconsistencies, because that's what it's been. I mean, there's been moments where he's been great, and I mean, just even pass to pass. He'll look great one pass, the next pass he whistles a three-yard pass 100 miles an hour that no mortal could catch. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe this was the step toward a more solid junior year, but it's just kind of hard to believe that when you see so much inconsistency.
Yeah, and I'm probably as guilty or more than anyone, because I really fell in love with his talent when he first showed up and thought he was going to be fantastic, and it's been slow to happen if it's going to happen. Hard as it may be, what are some positives we've seen out of this team that would give you a little bit of hope for the future?
Well, offensive line, I think, has been better than what I expected. I think part of that is a product of the offensive scheme, and they get rid of the ball really quickly, and so Locke's not running around back there for 8 seconds. But they haven't allowed many sacks, and I think I can definitively say this offensive line's better than last year's line, which, granted, was a low bar, but I didn't even know that they were going to top that, and I think they've been far and away better than last year's line. I think Demaria Crockett gives you some hope that he could be a decent running back, maybe even a good running back. I think he's already decent. He could be a good running back. Demetrius Mason, I think, is a guy they could continue to use in some fun, creative ways over the next few years. So, I mean, you could see a little bit of promise in certain areas. Defensively, I think it's pretty hard to find, you know, young guys that are really getting you excited. But and then the other thing, and I do say this in seriousness, not really in jest, is that this team at least hasn't gotten itself in trouble. I mean, there's not been many discipline issues. I mean, you had the stuff before the year, Walter Brady and Harold Brantley were dismissed, but at least there haven't been a lot of storylines surrounding Barry Odom's first year of player discipline issues. And I know we're really reaching down into, I've already stepped away from on-field stuff, but I mean, at least they got that going for him, and so he's set the standard for player discipline in year one. That's something. You're raising your eyebrows, Joe. Do you disagree, or do you think we're just really reaching deep into the bag there?
Well, does Corey Fittoni still fit in this space?
Well, that's true. They got a lockdown punter.
Yeah, that was definitely a positive from last year. They have an interesting thing going on at wide receiver, it seems like, and you mentioned Mason. And Jamon Moore has been really big at times this year. They've had guys go for 100 yards, which never happened last year. And as much talent as there seems to be there in that position, there's not been one guy who's really established himself. Probably Jamon Moore is the number one, but beneath that, Mason's had big games. Ray Wingo had a big game. Chris Black arrived early and has totally disappeared. So they seem to have a lot of talent there, but nobody's really kind of stepped up. So maybe that's a position where talent ends up becoming a strength instead of just kind of diamond in the rough, per se.
The one guy, I would agree, Mason at wide receiver, I think can be good. Mm-hmm. He's just a true freshman. And Jonathan Johnson, I think, has potential as a redshirt freshman, both as a punt returner and a receiver. I have sort of ceased to expect much out of Jamon Moore. I think against halfway decent competition, he's been totally invisible. And so I think really you've got a lot of sort of guys. I do like Demaria Crockett as a running back. Defensively, like you said, amongst the young guys, it's tough to find. I mean, they're playing. God bless them. They might even be trying their hardest, but I don't see a guy over there where you're going, wow, that's something they got. They can build around there. And the discipline thing, I don't know. I just don't get the feeling something is quite right still with this team. The way I really feel like this whole defense, the slowness to embrace it, the sort of we're going to passively aggressively hang DeMonte Cross out to dry. That is, I know Barry says he likes the locker room, and I don't know. To me, that isn't like all for one and one for all.
Don't you think that could be maybe one or two voices on the defensive line leading that charge, though?
Yeah, but nobody rushed his defense. Then maybe he's just not a fun guy to work for. I don't know. And to me, the effort I saw out there Saturday was a little iffy defensively. I don't know what you guys thought. I don't know. I struggled to know if Kentucky is that much better than Missouri that they should be able to run the ball down Missouri's throat that way. I don't think Missouri's that good up front, despite what we thought going in. So maybe that's just the way it's going to be every game. But I don't know. I see things we don't hear about discipline issues, but like, who is the going to be the safety of the week that seems to be in the doghouse for whatever rhyme or reason that doesn't ever play? You know, that always seems to be one of them, one of those guys back there that they're not too high on.
Yeah, it's been a revolving door at safety, totally.
Yeah, so I don't know. Basketball. They have their first exhibition game Friday night. Danny, just your thoughts on what you hope, or what do they hope to see, I guess, in this exhibition game before the season starts?
Well, anytime you can get young guys minutes is obviously big. So, getting Frankie Hughes shots and Willie Jackson floor time and some of those bigger guys floor time will obviously be big. One thing I think that will be interesting Friday night will be the rotation at point guard, because Jordan Geist is dealing with a injury to his right pinky finger, which has been keeping him out of practice, kept him out of the black and gold game.
And was this a drone injury?
Word is still out, but okay. He was not gushing blood all over his uniform. So Kim Anderson has said Colin Van Leer is now the new number two at point guard behind Terrence Phillips. And I see your eyes moving back and forth. Colin did play point guard at Pacific, but that's class three, class four basketball. Basically, he's got the job, I think, there because he isn't prone to turning the ball over a whole lot, and they don't really know who else they can trust in that position while Terrence is out. So how they use kind of that point guard position, getting Cullen reps there will probably be big. And they've even mentioned Frankie Hughes maybe doing some of that too, but he really kind of struggled in the black and gold game. He doesn't even have, I don't think, high school experience at point guard. So how they kind of find a way to deal with that will be kind of interesting. And then, again, what they do with these big guys in the post is still up for grabs. It doesn't look like Jacoby Kemp is going to get a lot of playing time. But Mitch Smith and Reed Nico are interesting because Reed is shown to be a pretty impressive defensive post in the way he was blocking shots on Friday night, and he's big enough to get boards, and Mitch Smith is more of a finesse guy. So how they rotate down there will also be, I think, something to watch out for.
Now, Nico kind of raised all kind of warning signs when you start talking about hip surgeries before they even get started, but it appears that he's okay now?
Yes. He's practicing. He's playing. And he's dunking, so he's mobile out there. I mean, yeah, two hip surgeries in one off season seems, scary. It's like raising five red flags. So, I don't know anything about the procedure. I know it was to correct some chronic problem, so maybe it was minor. But he's come back. He's practicing fully. He's playing, and I think you really have to kind of temper your expectations for him offensively. He wasn't really even a very good offensive player in high school. He was more of a defensive specialist in high school, but he's shown, at least against Missouri's offense, which I think at this point you kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt, but he's pretty good lining up in the post down there on defense. So, yeah, those freshmen will be something to watch out for. And depending on when anybody is listening to this podcast, there'll be a story in Thursday's paper kind of about those freshmen and what they bring to this program. So I think they're unique in that they have dove into this foxhole. They've sought out the fight of rebuilding Missouri's program, which is not something that Kim Anderson's former players, all those transfers out, you could really say that about.
Offensively, I think Kevin Puryear, you would guess, would be the most likely candidate to be the leading scorer. Who do you think would be the number two guy for this team?
I think, well, if I'm having to pick, I'm really optimistic about KJ Walton. I think he'll be pretty good this year, and he's got the craziest jump shot you've ever seen. But he's really dynamic going to the basket. When he got significant playing time last year, he was pretty effective. In fact, I think in games that he started or played at least 15 minutes, he was averaging almost 10 points a game. He wasn't getting consistent playing time even after, I guess maybe more so when Wes Clark left the team. But I think he shows a lot of potential, and if he can find a way to get that jump shot working, it's no textbook jump shot, but if he can make it work, then he'll be pretty tough to guard because he can draw out the defense to the perimeter, and then he's pretty effective going to the hoop.
Okay, well, tune in next week for our Mizzou Sports Podcast when we will discuss Missouri's game at South Carolina, football game at South Carolina, and look forward to Missouri's first men's basketball game.